Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Monday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. My name is Jared Cohen, sitting to my right if you're watching on the stream. And if you're just following along audio-wise, he is sitting on my right. That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. We've done this a few times over the course of the last few years, filling in for Brad, vacationing Brad Sesmatch, who's taking a little time off. So Mark, how are you?
It's good to be back. You know, I heard Brad calling the soccer game on Saturday night, a very exciting soccer game.
Yeah, maybe we'll
website.
Maybe we'll dig him a little bit. Pretty epic call from Mr. Sesmatch.
The 92nd minute in stoppage time, the Arizona United win the game. So just a lot going on here in the Valley of the Sun. Excited about Suns free agency. Glad to see the Diamondbacks get a win yesterday for sure, because I felt like that was a big week for them with all these NL West games, and they didn't really hold up their end of the bargain and get to 500. So I'm a little concerned about the month of July here when it comes to Diamondbacks baseball.
Yeah, it could be concerning. They have more NL West games coming up this week as the Dodgers are in town, the Rockies in town later this week. So we'll get into that. We'll get into Suns free agency. Today on the show, we're joined to talk a little baseball by MLB Network's and MLB.com's Jesse Sanchez. He'll join us coming up here in a bit, and also each and every Monday we're joined by Paula Bovin, AZ Central columnist, her news and notes, a weekly staple here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. So let's get into what's going on in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety and selection on new or certified pre-owned vehicles just off the 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. The big news that came down locally over the weekend, Mark, report out of Milwaukee is that Brandon Knight has already, quote unquote, agreed to an offer as a restricted free agent with the Suns, 5 years, $70 million, the exact opposite of how we saw the summer starting for the Suns last time around with Eric Bledsoe. So this apparently is going to happen, but there is the talks that this really won't become official until the Suns start to make some of their signings, and this will be maybe the last chip to fall, but the one that's already in place. Your thoughts overall on keeping Brandon Knight in the mix, the key piece they got in return for the Goran Dragic trade?
Well, I mean, truth be told, I'd rather have Brandon Knight as a starting point guard for the foreseeable future than Eric Bledsoe, just flat out, just because I feel like he makes better basketball decisions. But we've only saw a small sample size of that when he was with the Suns. Brandon Knight went down with a leg injury against Golden State, and his season was pretty much over. So it's interesting that he is not even going to test the free agent market. There's a little bit of the unknown about him, maybe just to Phoenix fans, because there's a huge sample size of when he played in Milwaukee. But I do feel like he's leaving a little bit of money on the table with the salary cap set to go up, tenfold or, next year. With the new TV money, 5 years, $70 million, what Bledsoe signed for, and you have two point guards. I guess my takeaway from it is at least you don't have three point guards.
As we saw, three didn't work out so hot. Here's the way I look at this. We looked it up. $90 million is the max for a restricted free agent over a five-year span until things start to change with the new TV money coming in. You kind of look at this as almost a good sign in that regard, because the trend right now, LeBron James is opting out every year until these new TV contracts come through, and people say he's going to be looking at a seven-year, $150 million deal or something. I don't know. It's some crazy number. Jimmy Butler, who's a restricted free agent right now, isn't as easy going for the Bulls, I think, as many people expected as a restricted free agent, because he's only looking for 2 years before the big TV money comes in. So all of a sudden you look at this situation, 5 years, $70 million, first with Bledsoe, now with Brandon Knight, and you look at it, and these are actually pretty good deals for players that are all-star, close to all-star caliber, to kind of lead your team. Throw the two-point guard thing out of it. You're two quality basketball players, two quality guys in your backcourt, at prices that really aren't as bad comparably to what some of the players kind of in limbo right now are going to be going after here over the next couple of years.
Yeah, with the cap going up, and you said LeBron James making potentially $30 million a year, and it's going to be higher, but I mean, Eric Bledsoe's had some injuries. Brandon Knight suffered injury this year, so this is definitely some security. I mean, it's $70 million.
It's still a lot of money, as I'm saying here. It's a good deal.
Even if your gross total goes up, you're still going to get killed on taxes.
And, in NBA talk, it's a good deal. For everything else, it's a lot of money.
And in 2 years, you don't know what's going to happen to your body, so it's probably a good idea to take the money and run, especially if you like the organization. And I think the best thing the Suns have going for them is their training staff right now. So I really like Brandon Knight, who's valedictorian of his class. Went to Kentucky, another Kentucky guy on the roster. I think Calipari might be out here a little more and maybe can steer some more Kentucky guys potentially here as like maybe free agents, and with all of his connections, that's something to definitely go after.
You've got to build a foundation of something. You said, the training staff right now is the most...
That's the star of the team.
That's the star of the team. But Brandon Knight, before he was traded, and this has been beaten to a pulp, but it's true, almost 18 points, almost 6 assists for the Bucks before he was traded to the Suns. He was being talked about as an all-star.
Yeah.
And he was traded to the Suns, and he took a little while, as you mentioned, to get going. He went down with that ankle injury, and the rest is history. Didn't get to see a lot, but this is a very good basketball player.
Yeah.
And you can make the argument that he's bounced around to a couple teams now. This is his third team, and he's still like on the cusp, but still hasn't proven it yet. I like his game a lot, and I was explaining this to Eric before the show. I kind of buy into the McDonough-Hornacek two-point guard system with the way they explain it, but it hasn't worked yet.
Right.
You divide the court in half from the hoop, like long ways. So basically you have hoop, and you have what's left of the hoop, and you have what's right of the hoop. You attack the gaps, and if there's nothing there to lob up or score with the layup, you kick it out, you swing it around. All of a sudden you have another guard who is very skilled to attack the gaps and then swing it around. You add a guy like Devin Booker, maybe a Danny Green or a Damari Carroll who can shoot from the outside. It can swing around, get into their hands. They need perimeter shooters in this system. I don't hate the two-point guard system, and the way they talk about it, it's positionless. So that kind of mentality, I like the notion of these two guys in the backcourt together for how they plan to attack. And you kind of have to get rid of the, this is a point guard, this is a shooting guard, this is a small forward talk. This is their system, and these are two good guys to run the system that they envision working down the line.
Well, I like the attacking system on offense. I don't know how much I like it on defense.
And
another takeaway from Brandon Knight is I thought Jason Kidd, after seeing him spill the Coke in Brooklyn a couple years ago, and who knows what he's up to in Milwaukee, but I thought there was some backroom deal with the Bucks that he was just going to go back to the Bucks, and they were going to use the trading Brandon Knight here to get Tyler Ennis and then go strengthen the team. So it's good to have him back. I just, long-term, Eric Bledsoe, basketball IQ-wise, I mean, I'm not saying anything here that anybody else hasn't said, but there were a lot of decisions last year that were questionable. You could also argue that he was maybe trying to do a little too much, but that has to change. If he's going to be the point guard and one of the leaders of the team, he's got to make better decisions and limit the turnovers.
That's Mark McClune. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. Free agency starts on Tuesday night.
9 o'clock at night.
9 o'clock.
I've been saying Wednesday, but then I forget that
it's
only Wednesday.
Wednesday on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Jeff Hornacek had some really interesting things to say about the Suns and free agency when he was on the show with Brad last Friday. This is a little bit of a snippet of it, how they have high hopes in free agency coming up.
We're hoping to get maybe one of these max guys, and if we can, it'll put the kind of the leadership. It always helps to have a star guy that, hey, he just controls. He's a veteran guy. Guys can kind of look at him. And then you have your young players and Eric and Brandon and Markieff Morris that, you know, they're ready to take the next step of being a good player to an excellent player and maybe even, you know, get an all-star. And then all of a sudden you have a couple all-stars on your team.
So LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Love, have they been spotted in town?
No,
would you
not
even
yet
bring them to town right now to sell Phoenix? Let's meet in Chicago.
Yeah, right. It's hot. It's really hot. I mean, for some reason, Marc Gasol hasn't been linked to the Suns at all, but that might be pretty pricey. But yeah, Aldridge, Love, there's some really interesting names out there. DeAndre Jordan, those are guys that they could use to kind of plug up next to Alex Len, and it could all of a sudden look like a really solid starting five.
Yeah, no, it's I like the, we were talking about T.J. Warren. I want to see more of him. I want to see more Archie Goodwin. Alex Lynn, if you look at the 2013 NBA draft, he might be the best player from that draft.
It's not a good draft.
No, but I think what we're seeing is Ryan McDonough making good decisions, and then when things don't work out, I don't know how much he had to do with the three-point guard system, if that was completely his call, and it's a mess that he had to clean up. But they have an eye for talent. If they can just get one of these guys, if Kevin Love says, you know what, and I don't think he is. I think Kevin Love sees the TV deal and wants to move on. But if they can get one of these guys, we're back in business, back in the playoffs.
That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared, filling in for Brad today on the show. Coming up next, Jesse Sanchez. Switch to a little bit baseball, talk a little Diamondbacks, MLB Network. Coming up on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Only one man that we would play this song for here on Sports 360 AZ, your resident Aggie in the Valley of the Sun, MLB national writer Jesse Sanchez joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show, talking a little baseball, always up for talking Aggie football. He's actually about to be live on the MLB Network, joining us here for, what is this, his bullpen session. Jesse, how you doing today? How are things in downtown Phoenix at Chase Field?
Well, Chase Field, I say it's pretty mild right now. It's only 1,000 degrees, currently 2,000 degrees. So if my phone melts into my hand, that might be the only way we get disconnected. So I'm going to apologize in advance.
Just another day in the life out here, right?
Hey, it's all good. I mean, I love it. I wouldn't take it any other way.
Well, if you need to borrow some television makeup, we can run some down there to you for your hit coming up here at the top of the hour on MLB Network. We appreciate you joining us. Talk a little baseball. Let's talk about the hometown team, the Diamondbacks, sitting on the doorstep of Mount 500 this time last week, and of course had kind of a tough week, ended it up with a win in San Diego to come back home. But are they a 500 baseball team, in your opinion?
You know, I mean, you got to go with the record. I mean, the record says they're not. And I think a lot of people were projecting them to be, at best, a lot of things have to happen for them to end up a 500 team. At the same time, you look at the talent, you look at these young players, Jake Lamb, Ahmed, Chris Owings, Paul Goldschmidt might be the best player in baseball. I mean, he's definitely in the argument. Yasmani Tomas, the talent appears to be there. Something is just missing. Maybe they're a piece or two away from being a 500 team and then going on to having a winning record. But that said, I think there's still a level of optimism in this D-backs clubhouse. You know, they're not going to count their record on at the end of June and just say, hey, this is who we are. I think they still feel they can improve, and we really haven't seen who the D-backs are.
Jesse, I want to ask you, you alluded to Paul Goldschmidt being one of the best players in baseball, yet, you know, and maybe I'm just paying attention to this as opposed to other people might not, but when I see on television billboards and commercials in regards to the All-Star game that's coming up, you not once see Paul Goldschmidt. From a national perspective, how is he looked at? Is he looked at as a guy that just puts up okay, like great numbers, but not much else to him, a one-hit wonder? Or is this a guy that people around the country see as a star?
I mean, I can speak to the press box. I mean, as far as the press box and media, anybody who follows baseball regularly, they know how good he is. This guy has the potential to win an NL MVP this year. So he's had a couple of good seasons. I think there's really no surprise there. Nationally, he's the leading vote-getter for the NL, you know, among first basemen. So he can't be that underrated if he's getting all these votes unless everybody's coming from Phoenix or unless, you know, McClune has 25 computers they're voting for.
He might.
Goldschmidt. So, I mean, I'm not sure if he has a high profile. He's definitely a humble, modest guy. He doesn't kind of put himself out there. He's really accommodating to media, but, you know, he's not the real flashy kind. He just produces. He's a hard worker. But I think if you look at the voting stat, he's leading. So that does say something. That does say some people are paying attention outside of Chase Field.
Now, you've seen me chasing around the kids. I don't even have time to return emails or tweets. So, as far as on the national scene for Major League Baseball, should we just go ahead and pencil in the the Houston Astros and the Royals and the AL to play in the championship series, and the Dodgers and the Cardinals and the NL. Are these the best teams in baseball right now, in your opinion?
You know what, right now it's hard to argue that they're not. I mean, the records say they are. If you watch these guys play, they're really playing well, especially the Astros have kind of been one of the biggest stories of the year. They continue to get better. They brought up Carlos Correa, the rookie, his first-round draft pick. I mean, the first overall pick from a couple of years ago. He's really been a shot in the arm there. The Royals don't surprise anybody. They went to the World Series last year. The Cardinals are the Cardinals. I mean, they're going to do it every year. I mean, if they played the playoff started today, yes. But ultimately, I mean, I'm not ready to crown a champion at the end of June. So it's definitely fun. If you're a fan of either of those teams, I mean, you can look in the mirror and look at your buddies at the water cooler or whatever and say, we have the best team in baseball, and have a pretty good argument.
Jesse Sanchez of the MLB Network and MLB.com joining Jared Cohen and Mark McClune, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Jesse, switching back to the Diamondbacks briefly here, Patrick Corbin, just one more rehab assignment start left before he's supposed to get the call up, barring any setbacks. Two-part question. What made him so good the first time around when he kind of had his breakout rookie season? And two, what can we expect from Corbin this season, because he might have an innings cap or whatever it might take in his first game action since coming off the surgery?
You know, I think first, people always love the side of the mound he throws from, so that always helps. You know, but one thing that I really noticed about him, in addition to having a good fastball and a good breaking ball, he was really aggressive. You know, he is not afraid to come inside. He is not afraid to challenge hitters. He's fearless on the mound. I mean, in some ways, he reminds me of a guy like Daniel Hudson. You know, they take control of that mound. Yes, Corbin was a young player. He was a young guy. But when he stepped on the mound, that was his. When you step in that batter's box belonged to him. He took control. And that's one thing I really noticed. I think people nationally paid attention to it. And you got to look at his stuff. His fastball, his breaking ball. I mean, He was one of the young talented arms at that time, and we're going to see how he progress, how he comes back from Tommy John. I mean, what I do expect is the velocity to be there, but then at the same time, there's going to be, if he's like every other person who's had Tommy John, there will eventually be some control issues as he works his way back, to the top form that he was. It's a normal process, and I expect him to be fully healthy, but it takes some time to come back. I mean, rarely will guys come back from Tommy John and be the same exact guy immediately. I mean, it could take some months, but I do expect him to perform well when he gets here.
And Jesse, this is a guy who's a pure athlete. I mean, coming up, he was a basketball player before a baseball player, and then he's realized how good he could be in baseball. The fact that, I mean, all these guys are athletes, but the fact that this guy is such an athletic, versatile type of athlete, does that bode better for a guy coming off an injury like this, or could it actually hamper a guy because he might be too comfortable?
You know, I don't think any, playing multiple sports or any of his, athletic history is going to work against him. I mean, he's a gamer, man. It shows. I mean, he's aggressive. And you can imagine if he played basketball or he played these multiple different sports, that he had that mentality, he had that ferocity in those other sports, and he takes it to the mound here. I think it's going to help him, just being a good athlete, the work ethic, knowing what it takes to rebound, knowing what it takes to try to get back to the top level. I mean, fans should be excited to see Patrick Corbin come back. I mean, this is a big deal. This is a really big deal.
And always a big deal when the Dodgers come to town. You got Bolsinger and Webster tonight on the mound at Chase Field, where you're live for us right now. Get ready to go on the MLB Network. But the Dodgers, they're on top of the division, but they haven't quite, it seems like, caught fire like they have in past years and kind of buried the rest of the division. Do you expect them at some point to really kind of find their stride?
You know, I think in theory, yes. I mean, I think you can say that about the Dodgers almost every year, because if you look at their roster, you look at their young players, you look at players they have coming up, they should basically run away with the division. But it doesn't always happen that way. And, I mean, this is baseball. There's really no guarantee that's going to happen. They can put the players in place. Will they perform? Will they execute and win the division? I think you can look to the San Diego Padres, who basically won the offseason with all their trades, with all their acquisitions, and now they're struggling at the bottom of the NL West. So you still got to play the games. I mean, personally, I still think you know, yes, people are going to look for the Giants and the Dodgers to be the favorites for this division, but I think anybody can still win this division. I still think it's going to be wide open unless someone really pulls away.
Jesse Sanchez joining us for MLB Network. Jared and Mark filling in for Brad. I want to ask you about also Yasmani Tomas. This is a guy that they didn't know where they were going to play him, what role it would be, how many at-bats they would get him, and now he's become the everyday cleanup hitter and playing a really solid right field. Are you seeing as much positive as we could have expected going into the year, or did people think he would make this much of an impact this early?
You know what, I'm not sure what people thought. I mean, I saw Yasmani back in the Dominican Republic before he signed, and the story on him was the raw power. So I think people expected more home runs. He probably doesn't have as many home runs as people expected. The pleasant surprise, I think, for a lot of people is how good of a hitter he is. How good, you know, how he always gets on base, drives in runs. He's lost weight. He's obviously pretty athletic. He can move around the infield and move around the outfield. He's been a pleasant surprise. I think there were some high expectations of him. I talked to him the other day, and he feels like he's getting comfortable. You know, it's a process. You know, he said, Jess, it's not like I can, you know, jump to the highest level in one day and face the top pitchers in the world every single night and just expect to dominate. It's going to take some time, and what you're seeing now is him becoming more accustomed to that.
So what's his personality like? We, through the language barrier, haven't been able to really get that personality. How would you describe him?
I would say he's funny. He's fun-loving. He's a jovial guy. If you just look at him, just watch him when he's at bat, watch him in the outfield, he's always smiling. And that's a tell of his personality. That's some insight to who he is. You know, he's a big soccer fan. He likes to goof around with guys. I mean, with players, with media, he's one of those guys, you know, he'll walk behind you and poke you on the opposite shoulder and walk away. You know, that kind of stuff. So I think... once he learns English, he's working on that, and maybe some other people can, you know, talk to him in Spanish. You can really see who he is, and he's a good dude. And remember, he's just 23, 24 years old, so he's still a young man.
Well, I know you got to jump on MLB Network here pretty soon, but before I let you go, Eric, our producer behind the glass, has got a Sun Devil shirt on. He's ready for that big showdown between the Sun Devils and the Aggies in Houston to open the college football season. Have you got a quick prediction on that game for us?
You know what? I've learned this a long time ago, and the people ask me, who is your favorite team? And I ask, well, what city am I in? So I'm still going to predict the Aggies, but I think the Sun Devils are going to make a run for it. It's going to be a close game, considering I'm a Phoenix man now. My kids are born and raised in Phoenix. I don't know. It's hard to root against ASU also.
Wow. He's might be it's torn. He might be objective in this one. Well, go ahead.
Now, how about that? That's from years of people asking me, who's your favorite team when you're in Milwaukee? And Brewers fans asking you who your favorite team is. You got to say the Brewers, right?
Yeah.
We got to play the ASU fight song next time you come on. And that was hard for me as a Texas fan, but we appreciate you taking time to join us on a busy day. And again, he'll be on the MLB Network at the top of the hour and all afternoon. Thanks so much, Jesse.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Jesse Sanchez, MLB Network, MLB.com, giving us some interesting insight on Yasmani. You know that you mentioned a good point. The language barrier is tough for guys like you and I that don't speak the same language. And so it's cool to get a little insight on who he is as a person because we haven't really had that opportunity.
And, you know, I don't know that we get that much insight on even who Paul Goldschmidt is as a person because he's so busy with the grind and the day-to-day, and he'll give you some things, but they're kind of like Easter eggs in the midst of an interview. But it is interesting to hear he's a big soccer fan and kind of a jovial guy.
I really like him
and Goldschmidt.
Oh, it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely fantastic. That's Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad. Coming up next, the Monday staple on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Paula Bovin News and Notes. Talk about the Arizona sports scene on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmatt.
Each and every week, News and Notes with Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Mark McClune. We're filling in for Brad Sesmatt today. And Paula, off the top, you know, you've done a lot around college basketball during March Madness, covering U of A. So it just so happens you've seen a lot of Wisconsin the last 2 years. And I don't know if you saw it or not, but news just came down. Bo Ryan has announced he is just going to coach one more year with the hope that his assistant will take over. One of the top coaches in college basketball for a long time, Bo Ryan, gonna wrap it up after this year. Your overall thoughts on him as the coach and what this means for college basketball?
I think it's a loss, certainly, for Wisconsin and overall for college basketball. I got to spend a lot of time around him during the tournament and the press conferences. And the thing that always jumped out at me was how the players felt about him. You can see, covering basketball as long as I have, sometimes the generation gaps get in the way of coaching. You just see guys that maybe can't connect, or maybe they don't hire the right staff around them to coach guys that are younger. But there was this great affection for this older, kind of gruff / funny guy, and he managed to bridge that generation gap. And I think that can be hard to do sometimes. And so, yeah, I'm sure they're very sad in Madison, Wisconsin now, because, you know, he did such great things with that program.
Yeah, the one-liners, I think, in the press conferences were legendary. There was something about bacon and eggs, or ham and eggs and a pig, and I don't remember what it was. But
there was something every press conference. It was really – it was so funny to see.
Well, your reaction to Devin Booker, the draft pick of the Suns, how he fits in, how he moves the meter here in the Valley of the Sun.
Well, my gut reaction, just as sort of a person, how mature he was for 18. I remember myself at that age, and it was like, I was, you know, nothing even close to that. So that part really jumped out at me. But, you know, I thought it was, for where they picked, for who was available, I thought it was a great decision. The bottom line is, though, is that he's not a guy that's going to change the franchise this year or next year. I mean, he's 18. He'll definitely add some, you know, he's such a great shooter and so fun to watch in that regard. He'll help the team in that way. But, he's not an impact guy. If they're going to make an impact, that's going to have to come from free agency.
And speaking of that, a solid segue, a guy that should make an impact for next season, Brandon Knight, a report over the weekend out of Milwaukee, that Brandon Knight expects to sign a 5-year, $70 million contract as a restricted free agent with the team, as keeping the core of, for now, Bledsoe and Knight together going into next season, even though we just saw a small sample size.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, for that organization, I think it's great. He's 23. I know he didn't have the year he had last season, but I think a lot of that can be attributed to his ankle. And I think if you're going to go out and try to court the big-name free agents that they're saying, the Suns are saying they're going to court, you want to show that you have a commitment to a good young team. And in Knight and Bledsoe, what, 23 and 25, I think, that's a pretty good backcourt. You know, playmakers, both playmakers. You got maybe a young center who's in Len who's going to show some promise. So you have to put something on the table. I still think it's going to be a tough go for them to get any of those big names, to be honest, but at least I think at least this is a first step.
Well, it's sort of a half-baked idea here as you were talking about the free agency and trying to go get a big name. But with the salary cap changing, I think that there is a greater possibility maybe in the next 2 years to grab somebody. Even if it's for a year with all these guys opting out, LeBron thinking he's going to make $30 million, that maybe someone comes out here and tests it out. It's just... Are the Suns selling enough right now? Or did they have enough to sell with their young team?
It's a great point about the salary cap, because it is. I mean, with it going up, I think players are going to be wanting to sign much shorter deals, and so they can make more of the money that's going to be available. I think even if they can get somebody short term, at least, you know, just to get someone in for a variety of reasons, a big name to have that go-to guy, a guy that's going to draw fouls and get calls and all that other stuff, a guy that's going to bring people into the seats, which is something the Suns need. You know, set that tone. They need to set that tone now, because, it 5 years I think it's been now that they haven't been in the postseason. They've got to do something. I'm fine with short-term if that's their answer right now. That could maybe turn into long-term.
So the news out of Chicago has been, and I know you're familiar with the Bulls organization, Jimmy Butler hasn't been quite as much of a lock to be back with the Bulls, because he only wants to sign a 1 or 2 year deal now that he's a restricted free agent, and the Bulls want to wrap him up long term. If the Suns swoop in and say, "Well, we'll give you a 2 year deal," is that a good move for the Suns, or do they risk losing out on a guy like that in a sign and trade situation or whatever it might entail? Would it be giving up too much for what it would probably take to bring him here for just 2 years? Is that a risk that you would be willing to take?
I would because I just think they have to do something. And I just heard that Butler story, and now I'm starting to hear maybe he wants to end up at the Lakers, which is, you know, people
everybody
still want
to go
to
end up at the Lakers, right? Everybody, Kevin Love, yeah.
Even all with all the struggles that they've recently gone through, that's still a destination point. That's so interesting to me. Yeah, I mean, again, I'm willing to take that risk if I'm the Suns, because I just think you cannot go through season six of not making the postseason and not energizing the fan base. I mean, it's morale is as low as I've seen with fans. You know, there was that real good uptick, not this past season, but the season before. The new coach, isn't this team exciting? They almost got in the playoffs. This was such a drop in fan expectations and performance, and then the off the court stuff. I just think this organization just really needs to be re-energized.
And it still seems like a Suns town. I mean, I think it just long term over 40 years of history. But you got the Cardinals with their playoff expectations. You got Paul Goldschmidt, who I think Jared put him in the Hall of Fame this morning with the Giancarlo Stanton injury. He thinks he's going to win the Triple Crown.
Yeah,
which is something to talk about. And the Coyotes have
it's
new
the year
uniforms.
Of the Triple Crown. I mean, come on.
Well, okay. As we switch gears to baseball, can Paul Goldschmidt win the Triple Crown? And this is an idea that comes from one Jared Cohen.
Gosh, I hadn't really thought about that. So no, I don't think he's going to, Jared.
Darn it.
I'm sorry. I'm just giving you the cold hard truth.
Well, let's talk about the Diamondbacks a little bit, though. Switching gears off of Paul Goldschmidt to Patrick Corbin. We talked to Jesse Sanchez last segment of the MLB Network. He is one more rehab start left, and then he's back. How much of an impact do you think this could make to this team that's, as Mark likes to put it, trying to get over Mount 500?
Oh, my God. I know. I'm heading out there today. It's been remarkable how that has eluded them. It's crazy. I think it's huge. You know, there's obviously what he can provide on the mound, but I think there's what permeates through the clubhouse. It's an organization and a team and players feeling like, you know, things are on the sort of upswing again. Something good is happening, somebody to rally around and be excited about, and clearly they need some of that pitching help. You know, is that that's going to make the difference in this organization? I don't think so. I was just looking at like what the Astros did and how they had to basically tear everything down and how awful they were for 2-3 years or whatever, and what's happening this season. And it just makes you start wondering if the Diamondbacks are just kind of trying to fill holes, but they're not going to get over the hump. I don't know. It's
kind of similar in my mind to what the Suns are doing.
Right. Like,
what are we doing here? We kind of a middle of the road 500 team.
Right.
Are we going to make the playoffs? But so with that being said, who is more likely, who needs to bring somebody in more, the Diamondbacks or the Suns right now?
That's a great question. You know, I think
that's all I got for the rest of the day. You care
drop
and
the
you're
mic.
Done. Yeah, drop the mic. I think the Suns can fix it faster. I think one player, because it's the NBA, can impact an organization so quickly, and that, you know, certainly a big free agent would do that. I sense, though, on the other side of it, I feel a little bit like at least the Diamondbacks have more I feel like they have a good vision. You know, there are a lot of good young players on this team still. You know, they went in and brought in La Russa. I mean, they seem to be trying to get things right. I don't know if past talent evaluation is still killing them or what, but I sense morale's still good around that clubhouse. I feel like the Diamondbacks have more vision, but I feel like the Suns could fix it faster.
Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. News and notes with Paula Bovin each and every week on the Brad Sesmat Show. Mark McLuhan and Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. You know what, Paula? I want to talk a little bit about the NL West here, because as we stand today, the Diamondbacks are 6 games out of first, which it's still quite a bit of a climb, but they're not out of the woods. The Padres are half a game behind them. And everyone, I think, thinks that the Padres are either going to go in the tank here or are going to have a great second half. Having some home games here to close out the month of June to start the month of July in the division. Is this kind of like a huge turning point type of week that we could look back on when you look at the Dodgers and the Rockies coming to town and you think back, oh, that could have been the stretch where they could have really changed their fate within the division or whatnot? I kind of look at this week in a kind of a broad scope that this could be almost an opportunity to make a move, or it could be the week that what could have been.
No question. I completely agree. And part of it, as you mentioned, the gap isn't that huge. I think a lot of us thought the gap would be bigger at this point in the season, especially with the Dodgers and that payroll. There's that, and it starts tonight. I mean, the Dodgers are putting out a pitcher that the Diamondbacks can beat. And so I think if you can start this homestand on a positive note, it would be huge. And especially as you talked about Corbin coming back, this team hitting all those home runs yesterday, there's clearly talent and young talent. And I think if they can capitalize on this run, they could make it interesting. The Dodgers have a game lead over the Giants? It's pretty close, right?
It is a game lead. I have it in front of me.
Right.
It is, shoot. Now, you can keep doing with your
keep
point.
Everything.
And I'll
ask the question while he looks this it up on the computer in front of him here. But so I'm finding myself.
One game. Okay.
There
you
go.
We can move on now.
Okay.
Research department on that. I'm finding myself stopping what I'm doing and watching Paul Goldschmidt. We joked about him winning the Triple Crown.
Sure.
Are you finding that too? I'm finding myself kind of being fascinated how they pitch Goldschmidt and Tomas. And I think that's the excitement going forward. Are you finding the same thing?
Completely. It's a great way to put it with those two. And, you know, it's stating the obvious, but you know something. One, either if they pitch to Goldschmidt, something great can happen. But also the strategy involved now with what teams are facing with this Diamondbacks lineup, at least that part of it. You know, how much do you pitch around Goldschmidt now, and how do you take that challenge? I think it's fascinating, and it's nice to see, I think, for the Diamondbacks that they're giving teams those offensive concerns. It's, you know, now they've just got to get the other parts of their pieces in place, from starting pitching and bullpen and everything else. So, but I think it's great, I think, for this organization, and I think part of the reason why there's still some optimism about it is because of those guys, and because I think this team sort of still feels good about itself, and as we said, the gap isn't that huge right now.
Just kind of, I know you're wearing your Diamondback hat today, but I want to switch gears. It's about to be July,
right?
And it means football is only a month away from starting camp. A storyline that you've just had on your mind involving whether it's ASU, U of A, or the Cardinals that stands out as we're a month away that you're just really excited to see start to come to fruition?
Well, you know, for me, and part of this was triggered this weekend because somebody from, and I hate to bring Vegas into this equation, but I'm going to anyway, someone, they posted the early lines on the big games in college football for the year, and ASU was not favored in most of its big games, and my wonder is, are they going to meet the expectations I think a lot of people have coming into this season, which are pretty high? I think they can, but the road, I think, is a little bit tougher than people realize. You know, from what SC is receiving a lot of attention right now, obviously starting out at Texas A&M, and a lot of the teams, Utah schools are improved from what they were last season in the conference. For me, it's if ASU can meet the expectations of the season. And, you know, I'm cheating a little bit, but I'm also really intrigued by Arizona and the way they finished last year and how much more of a dominant force can they be. I just think this is going to be a great Pac-12 football season, and it's so fun to be in a college football sort of town now where their expectations are really high. Hasn't always been the case.
All right, and as we let you go here, thumbs up, thumbs down on the Coyotes' new uniforms.
Can I kind of go in the middle? They didn't inspire me that much.
That
so
about sums up their uniform change.
I'll give them a little thumbs up, but I can't say I was, you know, doing cartwheels about it.
Well, we appreciate your time. A voice of reason in the land of confusion here, Paula Bovin from AZ Central Sports, joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show for her weekly segment as we roll along here on, what is today, June 27th?
Yeah.
I think
it's
so.
The 29th.
Yeah. 29th.
You're 2 days behind.
Hey, it's vacation time, I think. We'll be right back.
Monday the 29th on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
Glad we have
Sports
that straightened out.
Sports.
I think that was the worst toss to break in the history of the show.
There's been worse. I have done it. I have done way worse. Trust me. It's well documented. You could ask Jared.
After
this.
A fantastic segment by Paula Bovin, toss to break. We had this amazing thing that happened at the NBA draft.
We did. And it was probably a story that a lot of you might have seen, and maybe some of you haven't. So we're kind of doing one of those Twitter, social media, in case you missed it, segments here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. That's Mark McClune of CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad. So imagine you're 6'10", and people all the time say to you, whoa, do you play in the NBA, or are you an athlete? I have friends that are that tall. They get it all the time. So one of these guys who is 6'10", and I'm sure gets this all the time, decided, you know what? I'm going to play that card. And Elite Daily blogger Connor Toole decided that on the draft night last week, he was going to say, you know what? I'm going to be one of the guys that's going to be drafted. I'm going to be drafted by the Utah Jazz. And the rest is history. We're going to play a snippet of it via Eric Sorensen. Right now, if you missed it.
How's it going? My name's Connor Toole. I'm a writer and blogger for EliteDaily.com. I'm 6 feet, 10 inches tall. Normally, I write, but tonight, I'm getting drafted by the Utah Jazz in the NBA draft. Absolutely, yeah, I'll come down. There's a short one, too.
Oh, I can do a selfie.
You see no selfies? Okay. No, I'll squat down. I got you. I'm right here. Be good, bud.
If I wasn't overweight, I could come out here in a nice suit. I might be able to sign some autographs.
Next year.
So who you want to play
for? Oh, anyone will take me.
Uh-oh. You got to lose, man.
I'm not picky, man.
Get it in on the court, my man.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're going to be a star.
Oh, come on in. Everybody going to get a
So it turns out if you wear a suit, act really confident, and are also 7 feet tall, it's really easy to get on the floor of the NBA draft.
The Philadelphia 76ers select Jahlil Okafor.
Congrats,
Chris. Now that I did that, time to go to Manhattan as the newest member of the Utah Jazz.
Hi, how's it going? How are you?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I got a picture of me in the morning.
6'10".
Got it. Let's go.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Are you sure? Thanks. Bless.
Thank you.
I feel bad. Am I embarrassed?
No, it's fine. No.
I'm embarrassed.
Well, I'm drafted now. I should be getting numbers. That's what they said I should do.
All right, fine. 240.
I should be getting numbers.
How does he top this? How does he top this in his entire career? I mean,
he
can't do a better story.
He won't. It's just brilliant. It was so well done, and he was great.
Yeah,
the
Utah Jazz was the perfect. I mean, no one knows who the Utah Jazz selected in the second round.
Yeah, no.
No one knows who most people selected in the second round.
It's true.
He could probably go back and do that exact same story next year.
And just shave the beard,
right,
and try it again. It might be on more people's radars. I wonder how many people did know what was going on, and they just didn't show it. Like, it was like, wait, I'm a Jazz fan. They drafted so and so.
But
they drafted Miles Turner, right? They didn't draft a big.
The people
big
that
white
were
guy.
Hanging out outside the arena, I feel like that's kind of the dynamic of people who are looking for stars.
Yes.
And when you go
the best
out,
part of it, guys, to me personally, was he picked the perfect team to be drafted by. It wasn't the Knicks. It wasn't the Heat. It wasn't the Cavs. It wasn't the Lakers. I mean, I guess it could have been the Bobcats. That would have been pretty cool and obscure. But like,
aren't they now the Hornets? Didn't they change?
Yeah. The Hornets, whatever. Yeah, whatever. The Hornets, not the Pelicans, but the Utah Jazz. You know, the Utah Jazz, you know, he's like Mark Eaton 2.0.
He kind of looks like him.
You know?
Yeah.
Greg Ostertag,
yep.
It just fits.
But I think it's even more an indictment on culture when he goes out and people just automatically assume
and want to take selfies
and want to buy him drinks.
You have the
girls
the,
giving him their number.
The people that you know want to know NBA players, so they tell him they're going to be a star. Yep, and the females out there that want to get, I don't know, should I give out my number? Well, I'm in the NBA now. I should get numbers. Okay, it's 602.
Does it really work like that? I mean, is it really?
Yes.
It's what a different world.
Not
what
in the
amazing...
roads that I've walked. It doesn't work like that. You got to work a lot harder.
You know what, man? People just see dollar signs. They see him and they see one giant dollar sign.
And a giant in particular, 6'10".
I'm gonna start reading his stuff. But how's he gonna top it? What's his next?
I don't know.
What else do
but
you
they've set the bar very, very high. Very, very high.
3.5 million people have viewed that video
and
since
they got that up
Saturday.
Quick.
Or since Friday. Friday afternoon it went up.
It was up like Friday morning-ish, late morning on the East Coast after the draft. They burned the midnight oil because they know they had a gem right there. That's how you
well
do
played.
It.
Well, very well played.
Filling in for Brad Sesmat today, Mark McClune, CBS 5 Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.